And thank you again, Mr. Sterner. Welcome back, everybody. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Now a discussion about a new biography of an amazing woman. Bessie Margolin was raised in the Jewish orphans' home in New Orleans. She went on to study law at Tulane and Yale universities, and she became an extraordinarily influential lawyer, Supreme Court advocate who prevailed in more than 20 historic cases. Marlene Tressman is also a lawyer, and she has chronicled this fascinating figure in a new biography. It's called Fair Labor Lawyer: The Remarkable Life of New Deal Attorney and Supreme Court Advocate Bessie Margolin. Marlene Tressman joins me this morning here in Studio A. Good morning. Nice to meet you.
Good morning.
I loved this book, and because this figure is amazing. Bessie Margolin, everything about her was unprecedented, isn't it?
Well, at first, it tickles me to hear you say that as a first-time biographer. You're absolutely right. And I just felt that she needed to be reintroduced to the American public. She was quite well known at her time, but just fell out of history.
It's just so, her bio just doesn't lend itself to, it's like one of these things is not like the other when you look at her, everything. She's Southern. She's a Jewish woman. She's practicing law in the 1930s when it's just
2%.
2% of the practicing attorneys are female. I mean, there's just nothing that says this woman should be a Supreme Court advocate and become a really important figure in legal history. And also the connection you have with her is equally fascinating. How did you come to know of her and to meet her?
It was a wonderful opportunity. We're both, I guess, poster children for Southern Jewish benevolence. She grew up, as you said, in the Jewish orphans' home in New Orleans, and as a result was guaranteed an education at the Isidore Newman School, which remains today a very prestigious prep school. I was orphaned after the orphanage closed, but was a ward of the successor agency. And the agency petitioned, and the Newman School permitted me to have an education there under its founding charter. When I graduated from Newman and came to Baltimore for Goucher College, the guidance counselor wrote a letter of introduction introducing us, and then our relationship that lasted about a decade or more began.
Yeah, so you got to know her, and she was
absolutely
a mentor to you in your legal career. She was a mentor to so many others. She worked for 33 years in the Department of Labor's solicitor's office. Talk about her importance to labor law. I mean, the book is called Fair Labor Lawyer. She was right in the thick of things.
Absolutely.
With some really important legislation.
That's right. It was Frances Perkins' baby, the Fair Labor Standards Act. It was enacted in 1938. And as controversial as it remains today, it was then. Bessie was there for every step of its implementation. And by the time she retired, Chief Justice Earl Warren credited her with putting what he called the flesh and sinews on the bare bones of the act.
Yeah, so she was really very fundamentally crucial to what we now just accept as labor law and fair labor practice.
Absolutely. Yeah. The minimum wage laws, the overtime laws, and the child labor laws, which were all new to the federal government at the time.
She retired in 1972. She passed away in 1996. But evidently, at the end of her career, she was involved in the Equal Pay Act, gender equity in compensation.
That's right. And
which continues to this day to be
issues are still front page. She came to that only because it landed on her desk. Congress put the Equal Pay Act in the Fair Labor Standards Act. It was part of her portfolio, and she became a zealous convert to the cause of equal pay for women.
Marlene Tressman is my guest. She's the author of a new biography of Bessie Margolin called Fair Labor Lawyer. On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall, and it's Maryland Morning. Ms. Margolin also had an incredibly interesting personal life, and you dish some dirt in this book, which is, you know, makes it interesting. She was a great beauty, very fashionable, you know, impeccably dressed and made up all of the time. Never married, but not without romantic entanglements, huh?
Absolutely right. In fact, her persona, the elegance, I think, was part of what she considered part of her uniform for the job. You know, she believed that these cases required dignity, something I think she learned from her time even in the orphanage, seeing the grand dames of New Orleans who were the philanthropists. she carried that with her. In terms of romance, it was a very practical thing for her. She was not about to give up her independence. She was not about to give up her career. So having romance, in fact, with married men with whom she worked, was the easiest way to have people of comparable intellect who were passionate about having government serve a benevolent purpose and who wouldn't interfere with her agenda.
Yeah. Perhaps you write in the book that perhaps those entanglements had something to do with her being passed over for judgeships, that sort of thing. Do you think that that limited her options in any way, just career-wise?
Well, it's interesting. Unlike today, many of these issues about personal life never came to the public front. And as I tell in the book, it was actually Lyndon Johnson and Sam Rayburn, very prestigious congressmen who had a hand in making sure that some of the aspects of her illicit love affairs never came to the public light. I say in the book that there's a chance that one of these romances and the ensuing congressional and FBI investigations may have played a role in LBJ passing her over, but she faced other obstacles.
She was a feminist, although you're right, she wasn't a sort of radical feminist. She wasn't a Betty Friedan feminist.
Except she was.
Yeah, she was, you know.
She founded NOW.
Yeah,
with
she was one
Betty
of the founders
Friedan.
Of the National Organization
so
for Women.
So it was almost as if she protested too much about her lack of feminism, that yeah. She was, in fact, a very avid feminist.
And important as a mentor, wasn't she?
Absolutely. I mean,
she had just many, many people, men and women,
absolutely.
Whom she helped shepherd through their careers.
That's right. In fact, the very first woman solicitor of labor, Karen Klaus, credits Bessie with grooming her for that position.
She spent so much of her time being the first or the only. You know, she was the only woman in the 1927 Tulane University Law School. I mean, she was one of the few women in the Department of Labor. I mean, she was just...
wasn't her goal. She simply wanted to be one of the men attorneys. I don't think she was really looking to be the first. She simply didn't want to be the last.
Yeah. Are more people getting to know who she is? I mean, you said that she sort of fell off the radar. I mean, now this book is going to help bring her back on the radar screen. But what do you think, you know, as a lawyer, now you're approaching the end of your career, for young lawyers, men and women, what can they learn from Bessie Margolin entering the legal profession?
Well, I think in particular women, but all people who have something to say, need to give oral histories, need to preserve their papers. The whole issue of whether we will even have in our digital world the same kind of ability. So making sure stories are captured and told is very important.
All right. Well, you have captured and told a wonderful story here, and good luck with the book. I know you got a million appearances lined up in the next few days.
Sounds good to me.
And I'm delighted for it. So it's great to meet you, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Marlene Tressman, her new biography is called Fair Labor Lawyer, The Remarkable Life of a New Deal Attorney and Supreme Court Advocate, Bessie Margolin. Ms. Tressman will be at the University of Baltimore School of Law tonight, 7 o'clock. Discussing her book as part of the Enoch Pratt Library's Writers Live series. She'll be at the Hunt Valley Greetings and Readings on the 9th of April. She'll give a talk at the Clarence Mitchell Courthouse, hosted by the Bar Association of Baltimore City, on the 11th of April. And on April 16th, she'll be on a panel that's part of the annual City Lit Festival. That one will be moderated by WIPR's Mary Rose Madden. We've got links to all of those events on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Coming up Friday, our monthly Health Watch segment with Dr. Lena Nguyen. Our film gurus, Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday, stop by for their monthly visit and the story of the Maryland Censor Board. Plus, J. Wynn Russick reviews the new show at the Hippodrome Theater. Until then, for Nathan Sterner and the entire Maryland Morning team, I'm Tom Hall. The Writer's Almanac is up next. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.